and it was great.
Yeah, no, he's clear, and I was really wanted to talk to him because Victor ended up having extremely clear and yet idiosyncratic ideas about what a good tax was.
Really?
And why. So a sales tax is bad because it's a hidden tax. I think to myself, and I look at all the ledgers and say, not hidden. Everybody knows it. But to him, if you didn't know cumulatively over a year what it was, it was hidden.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Whereas an income tax is a better tax because at least once a year you are faced with what that tax is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the whole idea for him was, if you know what the tax is, you'll hold your government responsible to spend it well or not spend too much or whatever.
Well, he was a genius.
One of the things that Victor gets caught up in is after he wins re-election in 82, he proposes a gross receipts tax, which is basically all of your income before any deductions,
mm-hmm.
But it's a much lower rate than
sure.
it would be. And it goes nowhere, but out of that he then says, well, let's try the sales tax, which I've always opposed.
Hmm.
And so that's on the ballot in 1983 and gets creamed like mm-hmm. every other sales tax.
Well, I was one of the pushers, and what was it? We were edged 9-1.
It was your 1969, yes.
Yeah.
That McCall, yes. That was the worst defeat.
Oh, God. Yeah. And it didn't feel even that close.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, we appeared, I think it was me and Roger Martin, and I don't think Vic was there, up to Channel 6, I think it was, on a campaign thing before the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And all the crew were wearing no on whatever it was, 8 or 6 or 2 or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Not a good time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, we thought we were doing right because it was not, quote, a new tax in the sense that all the revenues went to relieve property tax.
Right.
And so we were trying to stave off one dragon over here by creating a dragon over here, and it was just too easy to shoot down. And
yeah. Yeah, Rich's opinion is that trading one tax for another is something that'll never fly with the voters.
Yep.
And it goes with what I've noticed. If it doesn't fit on a bumper sticker,
well,
it ain't going to go.
That's true.
And no on number always fits on a bumper sticker.
Yeah. Yeah, yes, it's kind of a bad word.
Number
yeah.
six, yeah, all that kind of stuff. So what I wanted to see what your memory would tell is it's 1971.
Okay.
You have just entered the halls of the Senate.
Yep.
You guys meet in December, and you caucus, and you say, Vic Atiyah is our minority leader.
Right.
And the news reports are a 10-4 vote. There's a mysterious mention I found once. One Republican said he would never support Vic. Hmm. Do you get a sense who that might be? Okay.
Hmm.
And it's neither here nor there, because Bob Smith eventually becomes kind of an interesting player like that. He doesn't go to caucuses,
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuff. But it's very apparent.
Really?
Very apparent. But then you go, so then it's January, and you're all getting ready to sit down for the session. And there's 14 of you, there's 16 Democrats.
Including Debs.
And so we've got a 15-15 tie.
Correct.
And there is a meeting where you guys all sit down in your Republican caucus and figure out what we're going to do. Then votes are cast, and Lynn Newbery is the one who gets the nod to be the president.
Okay.
Why wasn't it Vic?
I don't know. Sorry, okay. Drove a long way. For
no, it's okay. There's more stuff. There's more stuff.
No, I knew Lynn. We had a number of meetings, and I think to run it out, as I recall it, by the time we got through voting, by the time we came up with the settled agreement,
mm-hmm.
we voted for almost every one of the Republicans. I think we even voted for Debs once.
Mm-hmm.
But we never moved any of the D's, so it was always 15-15. But we voted for Atiyah, Newbery, I was one of the few they never nominated.
Is this in the caucus?
In the caucus.
In the caucus, you're just trying people out.
Yeah, well, actually, they went to the floor.
Uh-huh.
As I recall it, Bud was the Democrat nominee from the beginning to the end.
And then he
lost in turn to almost all of the Republicans.
Yeah.
As I remember it. I think I wasn't nominated, but... And I have no idea why. It's a bad personality. I'd forgotten that Lynn led.
There's a hypothesis out there that Lynn, being from Ashland, would be acceptable to Debs, being from Grants Pass. Because Debs had made it very clear, I'm not supporting anybody from the lower Willamette Valley.
Oh, okay.
All of you Portlandy, Salem-y people, no.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that, but that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like Debs.
Yeah,
it does sound like Debs.
Yeah, he was the sole surviving member of the coalition.
Yeah, and because of him, the coalition, in effect, continued.
Yeah, it did.
You know, John Burns gracefully votes for himself.
Yep.
And
after some persuasion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Was there persuasion? Were you part of that persuasion?
Yep.
Uh-huh. So it's going and saying you're the guy. Because it's interesting. He's mentioned as kind of one of the three or four if this stuff doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
Way back in December.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
He's mentioned, and then, you know, all of a sudden he pops up at the end.
Yep.
So.
Well, the way I remember it, back up a little earlier, the golden days was when I was majority leader in the House. And the edge was 38-22.
Right.
Good days. we could always vote your conscience, we told them. You know,
yeah.
We didn't need to vote. But I stayed too long because I stayed long enough that my last year in the Senate, we were 24-6
mm-hmm.
the other way.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot more fun to be in the majority.
Exactly.
But, so going...
You still get to vote your conscience, though.
Oh, yeah. Whoever cared.
Exactly.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that, but that's right. We did. Mm-hmm. I always likened it to being the engineer or the guy in the back end of a hook and ladder truck. That about the only thing you'd say for our six was that the other side got to pick the street and the speed and the destination, and we got to decide whether it be on the far left or the middle left or the middle right. That's about all we got to do with the back end. It became apparent because I don't know how long we started with our Grants Pass or our Medford, Lynn, but then we decided we'd just run a series, I think I'm correct in this, a series of our people would be a nominee for the Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost by the same 15-15. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense to me that Debs was interested in voting for a Southern Oregonian
mm-hmm.
If he's going to vote Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And so that went on for a long time. And then finally, there may have been others involved, but I'm quite sure Vic was in part of it. But John Burns, as you know, is from Condon
mm-hmm.
and is conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I had served with him on the Criminal Law Revision Commission
mm-hmm.
for a couple of years or so earlier on. And I think he was still in the House when he served on it, but anyway, by the time he was a senator. So I think, as I reconstruct it, and I should give my disclaimer that you're talking to a guy who's going to be 82 tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
My recollection was that Tom Hartung and I, he was the first one I talked to. I said, we, and I'm recreating it, don't remember it distinctly, but if we put out a more conservative Democrat, I wonder if we could get some of the Democrats to vote. We finally concluded, probably not,
mm-hmm.
but if we got the right Democrat, just all he needs to do is vote for himself.
Right.
And we would give them the 14 Republicans and Debs.
Yeah.
And he'd be the president of the Senate.
Yeah.
And so we figured the guy most likely to be the fairest from the other caucus would be John Burns.
Mm-hmm.
So we approached John Burns, and he considered it and eventually said yes, he'd vote for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, lo and behold, whatever you told me the other day on the phone, whatever, 57th vote or whatever.
Yeah.
Up on number.
There were a lot of votes.
We, the Republicans, nominated John Burns.
Mm-hmm.
And John voted for himself.
Yeah.
And then the rest of Phil and I, and he became. And there was a lot of understanding ahead of time that this would be, he'd be president of the Senate, but this would be a fair distribution of power and perks and all the rest of stuff. And I think there were, because I didn't get anything out of it. And, but I was out of the first year.
Yeah. I think the final was 10 committees were Democrats chairs and 7 were Republican chairs.
Yeah.
Which for a majority of Democrats sounds about right.
Yeah.
If you're going to split them, that sounds about right.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. We had, you know, there some people did a little grumpy, didn't get what they wanted or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But in those days, we also appointed a vice chair, and usually it was the opposite party.
Yeah.
And so it really was treated, I think, pretty much 50-50 with nobody forgot that John was a Democrat and responsible, including the Democrats, because as I recall, the Multnomah County Democrat Central Committee started about to recall him.
They started at it. I didn't ever find that they went further than starting it.
Well, it was
they were pretty grumpy.
Oh, very grumpy.
We're going to have a trial. We're going to do this. Like,
oh, yeah.
You sound like the Libertarians.
It's mild-mannered now, but back then it was scandalous. John did very well and was elected and held the course, and we all got along pretty well for a group that couldn't agree what time of day it was.
I asked you on the phone about the end of the session, and you said you didn't really remember it, but I'm going to put it out there and see if I jog anything loose. So at the end of the session, there are several issues that are out there, as are all every time there's a session like this. But the thing that really gummed things up was the 18-year-old vote. It's interesting because I talked to Earl Blumenauer, and Earl Blumenauer, as a Lewis and Clark student, was pushing it.
He was just a little over 18 at the time.
Yeah, exactly. And he was adamant that Victor was not a friend to them on this, and it's like, no, Victor voted happily for it in 67, in 69. He said, I work with young people for 20 years as a scout leader. Absolutely they can.
Sure.
And other people disagreed on both sides, and it never passed, but then we get up to 71, and things have changed because the Congress, challenged by Nixon, has passed a statute that says 18-year-olds can vote in all elections. And Nixon said, I don't think it's constitutional, but I encourage John Mitchell to take it up. And it quickly, by the end of this is in 1970, by the December of 70, the Supreme Court has decided, no, you can't do that, but you can for federal elections. The only way you can change it for state and local is with a constitutional amendment. And so in March, they do a constitutional amendment, and it's the quickest constitutional amendment ratified. By the end, 3 months later, it's ratified. But so Oregon is fighting this out. Are we going to be the 32nd one to ratify it? And it comes down to a partisan fight. Because, as Victor says, it and Bob Smith jumps in here as well, Victor is saying that you can't do this if the people of Oregon, who have just the previous summer voted against this, we can't, as a legislature, pass a law that the people have just said no to. It's just ethically not right. And people get their backs up, and off we go. In the middle of this, the Democrats are for it, so Republicans are against it. So it's that split in what's Deb's going to do, those kinds of things. In the middle of this, there's a crucial meeting of a committee with Harry Boivin as the chair. And John Burns is acting governor because Tom's out of town.
That's right. That was the key.
And Boyven, somebody in the back, and Earl thinks gave me a name if we think said it. Somebody says, if I were the president of the Senate, and Boyven says, wait, I am. And it took 3 votes to get out of committee. There was a Republican who would vote against it all the time. I think Amy. I'm not sure who that was. Who would vote against it, and 2 Democrats weren't there, so it was just not doing anything. And so Boyven said, oh, I can. And so he appointed 2 members of the committee. They had a full complement of 5. They passed it out 4-1. He went to the floor. Burns gets back to being this and blows a gasket. And eventually it's sent back to the committee, but the committee then passes it out, and it goes to a vote on the floor. And in the vote on the floor, it's voted down, and then people change their votes so we can vote on it again. And eventually George Wingard is the only Republican to come over and vote it. And it passes 16-14. So the constitutional amendment is passed. And this is the 8th of June or something. And so then, boom, 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 within 3 days, we're done with the session. Ring any bells?
Well, I remember the consternation when, before we changed the Constitution on succession, when McCall left, that all of a sudden our president of the Senate, Burns, became governor, couldn't be senator technically at the same time, had no vote, and Boyven, who was originally part of the coalition,
He invented it.
Yeah, well, yeah, for years, yeah.
He invented it back in 1937 when he was in the House.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
I didn't know that.
There was a coalition then, and he was the Speaker of the House in the coalition.
Okay, well, you know, old dogs. But then he became President of the Senate for a day or more, and that's when it all happened. Now, I remember that, and it was a little... concerning, of course, more than a little concerning. And for some reason, McCall had gone far enough that he couldn't get back, or didn't get back. I never determined to my own satisfaction how much is, because it did go over for a period of time. So I can do that. Now, the ultimately, how many replacing on the committee, that makes some sense. I don't remember that. And then it comes out of the committee. Makes sense, the first one. And then how it wound up on the floor and where Vic was, I just don't remember. Yeah, I just, it was disappointing where everybody was angry. Of course, that was kind of a necessary result of the first problem of selecting a presiding officer, because all this stuff fell from that discussion.
And as usual in a session, there are a few partisan votes during the session, but there actually aren't that many.
That's true.
I mean, and it's...
I tell people that, and they say, you got to be kidding.
No. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm in the heart of 73 right now for my own research, which is, so we have single-member districts now, which fundamentally changes the nature. And yet, even with all the new young blood and the more partisan things, there's still... The votes are all over the place.
Yeah.
It just, there's not the partisanship that we begin to see develop later on.
When do you think that started to develop? Have you?
When I talked to Ted Kulongoski about this, he saw it as really a function of kind of the mid-80s. It's in effect when Oregon Republicans began to think that they were Ronald Reagan. And so... The social issues become more important, so there's more litmus test kinds of things. And Republicans I've talked to see it at that same time. There's also one, it's a weird thing, when I get to that, I'll pay more attention to it. But the Walter Husses of the world, in effect, cause more partisanship to kind of keep him to the side, as well as we're more identified as Republicans, that kind of thing. So it's But the mid-80s seems to be a real coalescing time.
Well, because I reflect back on my both in the House and Senate, and it was, of course, when I was a freshman in the House, Jim Redden, lovable mm-hmm. Jim Redden was the minority leader, and he would always say, stand up at the back of the house and say, "I'm shocked and appalled." And the whole place would just break into laughter. The Democrats would laugh, and the secretaries would laugh, and everyone, "Oh, Jim." And that's just the way it was.
Yeah.
And then when it was 22-38, everybody was good. I remember Rod McKenzie, going back to the sales tax, Rod mm-hmm. McKenzie voted against it. He was one of the few Republicans voting against the sales tax in 69, I guess it was, and March or April or whenever. And but he said, if it passes, it'll be known forever as Republican pennies.
Hmm.
And do you remember
Rod? They have Abraham Lincoln on them.
Yeah. Oh, it was very good. He was a former Marine mm-hmm. from Sixes. And tougher nails.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And the name I just, because I this is also 67, is Beachville.
Oh, yeah.
And so Rod is one of the people who they haul in with Paul Hanneman and the bunch. They all come over to Roger Martin's apartment because he's sharing it with Lee Johnson.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's where they have the crucial yelling meeting to put everything together.
Yeah, and that finally carried. I always have fond memories because the only role I played in that was that if you remember when the beach bill, you're not riding on the beach bill, but the beach bill was going to be at the forward edge of the vegetation.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be the mm-hmm. that defining line between the dry sand. We mm-hmm. already saw the wet sand, the dry sand and uplands. And it occurred to me because in law school I've done some research, and we had the same problem on the Columbia when we started building dams,
mm-hmm.
that the line between Oregon and Washington was the main midstream of the main channel of the Columbia River.
Right.
That changes every now and then. And when you have workers' comp, mm-hmm. was it an Oregon worker comp or mm-hmm. Washington workers' comp? And back then, in those days, I did some research, and I think I'm correct in saying, they then took the coordinates and built the coordinates for the
mm-hmm.
difference, and Congress approved it, the difference, the line between Oregon and Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, I don't think, or at least by the time I had left, we never changed the county lines.
Oh.
So
they're still wandering.
Yeah, there are. I was going to write on a perfect murder.
Scamania Hood River-ish.
Yes. Yeah. I write a perfect murder as you could be in a rowboat and be below the coordinate lines for Washington, but above the mid-channel for Oregon, you're nowhere.
Right.
And but it suggested that might be a more, because what was happening was people were positioning, some were planting vegetation,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
some were uprooting vegetation.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I was surprised they could do it so quickly. So they just did the 16-foot, and that shows up in. And people have asked me, or I volunteered, I'm never sure which, on McCall's picture in the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
It has meter rod, surveyor's rod. And we used to call it the idiot stick. And when I worked for the highway department during the summer, that's what I did. Part of my mm-hmm. jobs for the local region bridge division. And it's a whole red and white stick, and that's what's foremost in that picture mm-hmm. of McCall mm-hmm. representing the beach bill.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking you down a path you didn't need to go. But anyway.
Well, no, the beach bill, it's not a central part, but it's a fascinating part.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It becomes important because for Vic, it's tied up in property rights. And then he is, as legislator and governor, has living with the reputation of it, the reality of it.
Yeah.
All that stuff. So.
Well, he did a marvelous job on all that.
And he says Audrey just hated that painting.
Oh, well, I don't blame him.
Just hated that.
There are a lot of things Audrey didn't like. a lot of them. And trying to follow McCall would just have to, even be in his entourage would be. What was it? Who was it? Bob Davis.
Oh, Bob Davis.
Mm-hmm.
When his function was always to, when McCall spoke, was to make sure he met McCall coming off the rostrum and guided him out so he didn't get mm-hmm. one of you guys asking mm-hmm. some questions. Mm-hmm. But he was held up something on the one with the knife under the shawl.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and somebody, I don't know who did it, somebody asked him, and that's when McCall came with his great argument about the vice president.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And his knife under the shawl. Davis said, I missed that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, I just wrote about that as well, just because it's there's national stuff. Hatfield's being considered for president.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In there as well, 71-ish. Mm-hmm. And then 70, 71 is McCall's getting national press for taking on the vice president. But then we go to the 72 convention where Vic is, there's a fight in 68 over whether Vic should actually be on the platform committee, which Vic didn't know about. It was a fight between McCall and Hatfield.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And Vic was
did.
The innocent centerpiece, and nobody knew this, and then it blew up. And Vic did well. He stayed there. But so 72, he's definitely on the platform committee. But he's also been asked to be on the finance committee for the committee to reelect the president, which we now know as CREEP.
Oh.
It was officially CRP, but Committee to Re-Elect the President. At the time, people called it CREEP. It's like, you're advertising people. You should know this. But
I'll figure that one out.
Or CRP is crap, so, you know, yeah. Whatever. But on the head of the committee is Maurice Stans, who gets caught up in Watergate, trial but not convicted. The counsel is G. Gordon Liddy.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yes. And so there's a little, you know.
Oh, intrigue.
Victor was there with the Watergate people as they were
making their story.
Richie Gordon Liddy had already broken into stuff at that point.
Yeah.
It was going. And
G. Gordon.
Yeah. Yeah. Just amazing things.
Hmm.
Amazing things.
Okay.
So let's go to 73 just a bit.
Okay.
In 73. McCall appoints Victor to be on a five-person energy commission. And I know there's at least one meeting where you attended because Victor couldn't go.
Mm-hmm.
But do you remember anything about the energy commission?
No.
Okay. My sense is that the timing of it is before the oil crisis that hits that fall.
Okay.
Because that happens in October is that war, September, October is that war in the Middle East. And then the boycott comes after that. My sense is this is a commission that we're looking at BPA running out of Columbia River Power.
Well, that's that would be what I'd put my money on, because I remember some were suggesting that we, mostly from California, that we provide California with our excess water.
Right.
And I came up with the idea, or somebody else did, that we'd swap them, barrels, our water for their oil in California. And that never went anywhere. Nor did the canal or the pipeline or anything
right.
else. But that was about that time. That was important, but it was the water problem that we were going to make California whole by
mm-hmm.
shipping our water.
Mm-hmm.
All I remember was the waiting in line for the gasoline
yeah.
service.
And yeah.
I was listening one night. Well, when I was in California going to college, I listened to KEX.
Mm-hmm.
And then for a long time up here, I listened to KGO.
Because mm-hmm.
those are the two stations
yeah.
I listened to. And one night I was during all this McCall and Straub and later with a brick in the toilet and all that sort of stuff. I heard a talk show on KGO, and they were talking about the odd-even.
Mm-hmm.
Resolve all the problems with people with your last letter on your number on your license plate. You could serve. You could be served on the even day, if it's even. Or on
mm-hmm.
it. And I never asked Westerdahl or the governor whether they might have been listening to KGO that
mm-hmm.
Wednesday evening
mm-hmm.
or whatever it was. But within days, McCall came out with his odd even solution
yeah.
to the problem. I thought, well, I think I know where he got that one.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Which was good. Solution.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I don't even remember being on the energy, but what we were talking about. But it probably had to do something with hydroelectric power, as you said, and,
mm-hmm.
and because in my recollection was BPA was was to Oregon what TVA was to the Tennessee Valley.
Yeah.
I mean, they ruled. Yeah. And because they had no responsibility to us, they had it all to big government.
Exactly.
And so I had friends who worked for BPA, but that could be what we were talking about there, with that because we were starting to use more electricity, and we've been spoiled so badly because of all the wonderful hydroelectric dams that we built, and we didn't know what it was like to have coke-fired generators or anything else. So, but we found out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I wrote one of the chapters is about energy, because that's the focus of Vic's first year as governor. Mm-hmm. 79 is the second oil crisis because of Iran. Then Three Mile Island happens in March.
Yeah.
So we're Trojan. Are we going to build Pebble Springs? Whoops.
Yeah.
That's all.
Maybe not.
Maybe not. And then it eventually comes together with the Northwest Power Planning Council. We've got to really get the states to cooperate on what's happening with the Columbia and be in there to talk equally with the feds instead of having EPA just tell us what's going on.
Yeah. It brings back old memories, because I'd forgotten all about that. Yeah.
Yeah. But this committee, which I didn't know when I wrote that chapter, I think is going to place Victor much earlier as gaining an expertise, an idea of what's happening with the energy stuff.
Yeah, well, he was very good that way. He did his own work. I've got a dry well on that one.
Okay. One more question then. 1971, Victor pushes and it becomes reality. There's a legislative commission on Indian affairs that's still in existence to this day. Do you remember that at all?
Well, this is where my brain death is overtaking me. We had quite an episode, and it probably was what you're talking about, or it happened later when I was on the Supreme Court. But I must have been back in those days, tried to boost up the, help the governance of our various tribes. And Vic was leading that. And we had one meeting, I remember, in the room 50 or whatever you call the one in the basement now. And he and I attended to talk with and had assembled the various councils and committees from a number of the Indian tribes in Oregon. And I don't know whether that was part of it, so I can't be much help to you. But he was, I know he was sensitive to that issue. And something about it, we needed them as much as they needed us.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember one of the meetings, but I don't remember the context.
No, that's good. That's good. Trying to figure out why Victor cared so much about the tribes, I've got a working hypothesis, and I don't know if I'll be able to nail it down, but the working hypothesis is that it was, I just based on his name, Betsy Johnson's father.
Sam.
Sam. Because Sam in 67 is when he sells his mill to the Warm Springs. As Roger Martin puts it, they saved his bacon. But in any case, but he and Vic were close at that point already, and so I'm just wondering if that might be when.
Well, Vic, go ahead.
No.
I have a hard time placing the time, but I still remember that Vic was very interested in working with the tribes, and it might have been through Sam, because Sam was an important member of the House at the time, and his father had owned the workings of the Warm Springs mill. Of course, the Warm Springs owned all the timber.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to think of, there must have been something else, whether the Pelton Dam played into it, or whether it was water or electricity or timber. But Vic became champion for the, as I remember, for the governance of the tribes, trying to get so that they had a voice in their own government, but cooperated in our government.
Right.
And of course, there are a lot of things going on: Belly Chinook Reservoir and the Pelton Dam, and and the recreation was booming over in the Deschutes County in that area. But I can't help you. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I just discovered maybe a month ago that, because I'm going to talk to Betsy and see if she knows. But Donna Zajonc was Sam's legislative assistant.
I don't remember. Do you remember that?
And
I don't.
She's around, and she's peripheral to my story. I have her in there.
Is she still living around here?
I don't know. I think she is. But she comes up because she was running against Barbara Roberts for Secretary of State.
Oh,
and I just have that a brief thing in there because Donna Zajonc was, let's go with helmets in and take care of the Rajneeshis. And Barbara was more like Vic. Let's talk about this. But if I can find Donna, she may know as well. So.
Yeah. Did her husband pass away?
You know, I can't remember.
Okay. I don't remember either. No. I haven't seen Donna for 40 years. So.
Yeah.
Well, very interesting. I'm glad you came down here. Sorry to make you drive all the way down.
No, this is great.
You give me lots of pieces,
and then I put them back together, and I trace them through and see if I can find where they go. And
very interesting.
Yeah. It's great.
Well, anything else in that?
No.
I meant to offer you coffee or ice water. Or
something, oh, no, no. I'm fine.
Get a word in it.
I'm fine. Yeah, it's really fun, and because I'm doing the legislative stuff now. I've done Vic's tax reform when he tried to do the sales tax. I've done the unitary tax. So I've done the, when he's governor, they're going to be big thematic things. But to get him there, it's going to be more chronology. Because he picks up things and builds on it, and it comes back again, and so... Geez, when you're governor, you know, like this energy thing. Wow, when he's governor in 79, you can refer back to this thing in 73. You know, those kinds of things.
Well, he did that his whole career, because I think one of the things that was most interesting to me was, and he orchestrated it, but he had that same skill that he'd serve in some quiet committee or introduce a bill that was something or had a picture taken with some governor signing it, and there's Vic, and it didn't make him much difference. And these were pure Democrat issues at the time, but the housing and election stuff, and I'll clear back into the, he was part of the Young Turks that was elected.
59 is the Young Turks.
Okay.
And then they add in Bob Smith when he comes in 61.
Okay. Well, that group of people, I'm trying to think, one of them was a moving company exec from Portland, I think, or later became. Anyway, but he did a lot of planting seeds in the Young Turk days that became, just as you tick my mind, became very relevant and gave him credibility, because he could go back in his file and pick out a bill that he had promoted or introduced or written or whatever to do what we're now talking about.
Yeah.
And the Democrats thought it was all new. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Senator Tia.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was incredible.
Well, the IP-28, which we're going to vote on in the fall, this big gross receipts tax. Victor proposed a gross receipts tax.
You mentioned that. Yeah, I'd forgotten that.
And it's based on Mark Hatfield's net receipts tax. And it's just like, it's just, when I talked to you a year ago in February, you were talking about going up to Washington State once, and the Republicans and Democrats were completely opposite.
Yeah, that water in the Columbia changes your political base.
And it's just like, you know, given time here, it's exactly, and we saw it in the sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
You just went back and forth. But, I was doing a show on Channel 2 after the short session was over with Democratic leadership and Republican leadership. And the host asked him about this, the IP-28. And the Republicans were, it's a sales tax. Oh, and this is, the Democrats were, it's going to go after big corporations. They said, well, Jim. And I said, well, you've just heard it. Whichever of these arguments wins,
yeah.
wins.
Yeah.
If it's a sales tax, it's going to fail. If it's against big corporations, it's going to pass.
Yeah.
And I just need to tell you that Victor Attia, the Republican governor, proposed exactly this sort of tax in 1982.
Oh, boy.
You can see
the D's eyes lighten up.
Like, oh, jeez. His was more, much more on individual taxpayers. But same idea.
Yeah.
Same idea. And his would have raised $1.5 billion in today's dollars, which is in the ballpark of the $5 billion they're talking for this. So it's just...
Oh, that's amazing.
Isn't it interesting?
Oh, good.
I just love to hear about politics and how all these things develop. You know.
Everything changes, but
everything
stays
the same.
Yeah.
As Vic said, there's only so many ways you can tax people and only so many people you can tax.
That's right. That's
and so how are you going to get A, B, A, C, A, D?
Yep.
And whatever works.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that's... Well, when is all of this going to be published?
I hope next year.
Okay.
When I'm working, because I was on sabbatical when I saw you.
Oh, okay.
But when I'm working, I get I carve out a single day a week is when I can work on the book.
Oh, good.
Well,
you're
but
doing
now it. I'm in summer, and so I'm cranking.
Doing I'm a great job.
Doing like, I should have 500 pages done by the end of the weekend.
You're doing good. In depth.
Well, I want to write big, and then the book comes out of that, but the big thing goes on to the archive website with connections to everything.
Oh, wonderful.
So you'll be able to say, I don't think so, and you click on it, and there's the newspaper article, or there's in Vic's hand, you know, this, that, or the other, or whatever.
Good. Well, thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
He's certainly a wonderful fellow. Is Mrs. Attia still...
Dolores
still under the weather?
She's... Yeah, yeah. Although, because I've never been able, I mean, I met her, Vic introduced us, but she's off in her own world.
Yeah.
But I just discovered in our archive, we have a 1978, just after Vic's been elected, This Is Your Life, Dolores Attia. At some luncheon, so I think the background sounds like the Republican women somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Had a This Is Your Life. So I'm going to have in her own voice and the voice of her contemporaries much more about her growing up, her place, a voice that's really missing.
Yeah.
Very quiet. It's very, very hard for me to get to at all. So that's great. It's only 40 minutes, but it'll be wonderful.
Oh, that'll be good.
And the fun thing when I'm doing the legislative stuff, because it's Tom McCall's era.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what I'm discovering is we think we live in Tom McCall's state. We identify as Tom McCall's state, but we live in Vic Attia's state.
You do.
And sure. So I don't know how I'll be able to express that in a title or something, but that's what I want people to come away with.
Yeah, I don't know how either, but I think that you, on your own, came up with the idea that you go back in his early days, you find seeds or roots or...
Yeah.
Blueprints or whatever
yeah.
for things that later became very popular
yeah.
and he came back, but he was revisiting it. It was
yeah.
not heard it on KGO or something.
No.
He'd done some work. When nobody else was in the field.
Yeah. And doing the legislative side is fascinating because that is the Hatfield years, the McCall years.
Yeah.
And Straub. Mm-hmm. And it's basically we look back and it's McCall. McCall, McCall, McCall. But McCall didn't do the hard work of making it happen in the legislature.
Of course not.
This book is going to be, for things like the Beach Bill and stuff like that, it's going to be, this is why people like Vic Attia and Paul Hanneman and some others say McCall had nothing to do with the Beach Bill.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it was doing this, this, and this, and then he jumped in.
Right.
And Vic is very clear. It wouldn't have passed without McCall. But McCall had nothing to do with it, and he didn't do the hard work to make it pass.
Sure.
Yep.
So that's why when he said Audrey hated that painting, it has even more resonance for Vic.
Yeah. Oh, that's